Hello, and welcome to the very first episode of The Media Sessions. I'm your host, Dean, and on today's session, I'm going to be discussing a little bit more about televangelism and censorship, so stay tuned. Hey everyone, I'm Dean, and I'm currently pursuing a Master's of Arts in Communication Management via coursework. So I know what the fuck I'm talking about all the time. But I just want to discuss a couple of my thoughts in regards to televangelism and censorship, because those were the last two classes that I had for my contemporary media and cultural communication class. Yes, that is a class that I love and enjoy because I literally want to fight everyone in my... Okay, I don't want to fight everyone, but the tea is not exactly the tea, but there is tea. Tea in the sense that I feel like I'm a bit too liberal for some of my classmates. Because I'm literally here like, eat the rich, you know, punch them in the face, you know what I mean? Anarchy. I mean, those are all like fleeting ideas, but we do get onto these different topics. And, you know, my lecturer, he's a bit conservative, a bit liberal. He's chilling in the middle, not to offend anyone. Because, I mean, that's what happens when you're in a collectivist culture, is you basically want to do what's good for the general public as opposed to you really sticking up for your own opinion, which if that works for you, 100%, you do you, boo, have fun with that. But for me, I definitely kind of see myself as someone who understands the concept of collectivism but does not really conform to it that much. But you know, that's a different podcast. I do not want to talk about collectivist societies because I have feelings. But what I want to talk about today is televangelism and censorship. Let's start with televangelism. So for those of you guys who are lucky enough not to know what that is, televangelism is essentially when someone of prominence or importance in a religion basically has like a TV show, a TV channel, or like they like to broadcast what is taught in their religion, or they like to share their religion. And it's specifically usually like people who are priests, people who are imams, people, you know, like people who are like the heads of something, like a head of a church, head of a synagogue, head of a mosque. Those are the homies who basically have these huge platforms to basically share their faith and share all that kind of stuff. So a lot of people kind of usually associate televangelism with people who have like mega churches, or at least in my opinion, that's kind of how I usually approach it. So I think about people like Joyce Meyer, people like Joel Osteen, T.D. Jakes. I mean, because I grew up like with old school televangelism. We're calling like Billy Graham and all those homies. So those people would just basically have their own channel, have their own TV shows, and they would like share the gospel, they would share the Bible and the likes in that sense. Now, there's 100%, there's nothing wrong with that in the sense that televangelism is televangelism. It's a form of entertainment for some, and for other people, it's like a different way of making revenue, another way. You could possibly even rope in some of the biggest contemporary Christian musicians, such as Hillsong, The Planet Shakers, Bethel Music, Jesus Culture. So when I talk about televangelism, I feel a lot of people kind of just stop at, you know, you're just broadcasting a religious message. But I personally would want to take it a step further and also just look at the music industry. So I have a friend, Tahila. So Tahila, he's very interested in like hip hop, and that's just his thing. He studies it, and I've always loved having conversations about this with him because I think his perspective is just so phenomenal. And just a useless plug here, but we do a podcast together called the Learn to Let Go podcast. So I'm gonna just link that in the description so you guys can check it out, because it is always a good time speaking with him. And in our last episode, we actually talked a little bit about like Christian hip hop and all that fun stuff. So that is definitely something you can keep on your radar. So I am posting a podcast. It's just not here. But yeah, so that's basically televangelism. Now, in the class, you know, my teacher, he introduced it, and he was like, yeah, this is televangelism, this is what people do. And he just asked us some very fun questions, in my opinion, very interesting questions. And one of the questions was, should televangelism even be a thing? Like, should we be allowed to broadcast as much as we do? And I'm just thinking, dang, man, you're asking all the real questions here. Now, I grew up in Ethiopia, and in Ethiopia, we have this thing called DSTV, so digital satellite television, and it's basically this big cable company that is hosted in South Africa, but depending on which African country you're from, you basically get access to about like 100, 200 over channels and radio stations where you can just get information. So growing up, I used to watch like, you know, Disney, Cartoon Network. Then like we'd have like the movie channels like Mnet, Mnet series, and then we started to get some of the bigger franchises like, you know, Fox, Universal, MTV, Trace, and all that fun stuff. But one thing that was also very evident was that there were religious channels. So we had channels like TBN. We also had like a channel that was specifically dedicated to Islam. I don't know. That's when I was growing up. I don't know if they're still there now, because Lord knows the last time I watched DSTV. It got me thinking, like, should these be there? And then at first I was like, I mean, freedom of information, people can do whatever they want. You know, it's not a big deal, you know, because it's only really indoctrination if, you know, that's the only channel that is available in a country. And if it's a country that claims to be culturally diverse, or if they're a place that where they want to basically accommodate for more people, then of course it's like, leaves a bad taste. But in general, it's just like, I mean, growing up, did my mother watch a little bit too much TBN and Christian channels? You know, that's not for me to say, but... But I was just like, I mean, if it's not really hurting anyone, if it's indoctrination. And then we got to talking again, and then he was like, let me refine my question a little bit. And I was like, okay, so you go off. And he said, basically here for some channels, they are basically dedicated, or they're told to have like a specific religious program on from a certain time to a certain time every single day. And I'm just like, word to your papa? And he was like, yeah, man. And I was like, yo, okay, that's not how we talk in class, but... You get the gist. And I was just thinking, that's not okay. I mean, there are countries around the world that are self-proclaimed religious countries. Like how we have the Vatican, like the self-proclaimed Holy See, where Catholicism is like basically the only religion practiced there. If I am wrong, please correct me. But this is just me thinking out loud. And then, of course, we also have some countries like, for example, the country where I was born, Zambia. So in Zambia, the self-proclaimed religion of the country is Christianity as well. And the country that I live in, Malaysia, basically they have a lot of laws that are dictated and judged by Islam. So if you're a Muslim and you come to Malaysia, you'll basically be you'd be tried under Sharia law as opposed to federal law. I hope I'm getting this correct. Malaysians out there, if you're listening, help a homie out. But yeah, so my teacher is sharing this and I'm thinking, well, that's kind of awkward. Because you know those free-to-air channels or like those free-to-air TV stations that you can kind of watch when you're at home or like you're brain dead or something. So for them, that's kind of what it's like. And I'm just like, that's kind of interesting, because I know growing up, before my cousins got like DSTV, they were also kind of subjected to the same thing where they could just watch free-to-air channels. And I would remember specifically, especially on like Sundays or like certain times even during the week, there would only be Christian programs. And I'm thinking, well, if I'm not a Christian and I want to watch TV, then like, you know, where's the give and where's the take? And I never really thought about it in the sense that, you know, that's kind of problematic. Because the truth is, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. As someone who is not exactly for religion, but I'm also not against it, I feel that there should still be that freedom of choice to opt out of it, as opposed to you just kind of having no choice but to watch that. So when I look at it in that light, it's like, okay, I mean, you can always just choose to turn off the television, you can always choose to do all those things. So what is innately wrong with televangelism? And then the discussion kind of went forward. So just to clarify, the class was not basically saying televangelism is wrong, you should stop it, and we should finally stop it. It was just exploring televangelism's place in media in our society. Because whether we like it or not, televangelism is a form of media that is consumed by a crazy amount of people. I mean, sometimes I'm just thinking here, you know, who is actually watching this stuff? And then I realized that, you know, my mother... So the thing about televangelism that, you know, has never really sat right with me in the sense is that when we look at mega churches or the people behind the largest you know, groups of televangelism, essentially. So I think that is where my perspective kind of was like, I'm not for this. Now, I don't know about you guys, so I'm specifically focusing on Christianity because that's what I know, that's what I grew up with, and that's kind of the circle that kind of surrounds me in terms of religion, because as much as I live in a Muslim country, I still find myself in all of this Christian-like drama because I guess, I don't know. It just follows me, you know what I mean? You know, don't follow Jesus, follow Dean. No, it's a joke for all the Christians in the back, you know. Jesus is the way, the truth, and the light. You know, you follow him, eh? Yeah, okay. Let's continue now that we've unoffended the Christians. I just began to realize that the reason that I've never really liked televangelism, or it has never really sat right with me, especially in the past couple of years, is simply because of the direct disparity and gullibility of most people who really do give in to this kind or this form of Christianity. So I don't know how familiar you guys are with prosperity gospel, but prosperity gospel can basically be defined as, you know, you pay X amount of money or you do X amount of deeds and you ask God for this and he will give it to you because you've been so loyal, you've been so faithful, you've been so ABCD. In some sense, yes, that's true. If you're faithful to God and you do what he says, I mean, he's free to give you whatever he wants. You know, according to the Bible, as much as God gives, God can also take away, and God does not have to give you anything. Now, I'm not saying this to be like some bitter ex-Christian or whatever, but it's kind of what the Bible says. I don't remember exactly where it is, but basically God will just give you what he thinks you need, nothing more, nothing less, more or less like that, something along those lines. So what these priests or evangelists or whoever they are, what they do sometimes is they kind of play on people's vulnerability and gullibility in the sense that, okay, you donate X amount of money and, you know, your prayer will come true, or you do XYZ and this will come true. And to this extent, we've now found that a lot of these televangelists are living in multi-million dollar homes. They have yachts, they have airplane, they have private jets, they have like private islands or so I've heard rumored. And it's like, okay. Let's put 7 and 19 together, okay? Essentially, one thing I'll always side-eye is if there is like basically a head of the church, someone who's like the head of the church or head of whatever, if they are disproportionately richer than the people who go to their church, then there's definitely a problem going on. And maybe not so much in like American churches, like some African churches I've seen. Now, I don't want to say his name because I know some people, y'all love this man. He passed away, I think. But y'all love this man, right? So essentially this dude, he would get people from all over the world would literally fly to his church in Nigeria to get healing, to get this, to get that. But they would always come at a fee. You gotta pay for your blessings, you gotta pay for your miracles. That was his main premise. And this dude was a millionaire. Like, he had this huge like synagogue church thing where he would preach and he would do all sorts of stuff. But the thing that was always really shady to me is that you built your church in one of the poorest places in Nigeria, right? And all the people who go to your church, I'm not saying that they're not rich or affluent. I'm just saying I feel that 70%, if not more, are dirt poor. They've got nothing. And they're hinging on this wee bit of faith that they have in this higher power to deliver them from their situation. And then you, Mr. Priest, you Mr. Prophet or whatever you are, you come in and you take advantage of that, you know? And the thing is, because of televangelism, he's not just been able to spread his little social influence thing in Nigeria. My guy, I said, people are coming in from all over the world. And I think that's been the detriment of televangelism, is that instead of just like you manipulating this small group of people who are around you, now you can manipulate people from around the world. Exactly. So that is the problem. Look, when it comes to religion, when it comes to higher powers, I might be the worst person, I might be the best person to talk about it, I don't know. But the main point I'm trying to get at is the media has kind of opened this gateway for people to kind of enter and scam people. And unfortunately, one of the biggest scammers that we still live with, these like wolves in sheep's clothing, are televangelists. Now, I'm not saying all of them are horrible, all of them are bad, but I'm just saying you guys need to look out and find your two cents when it comes to really associating or really listening to what these people have to say. Especially for Christians, I'll speak directly to Christians. Look, I'm an ex-Christian. I've left the religion for my own personal reasons. But one thing that I will never forget as a Christian is that you always had to do your due diligence and read the Bible for yourself. And always find where stuff is said. Always turn back to your holy book so that you are not being misled instead of being misled by someone else, okay? That is my biggest top tier advice for all of my Christian hombres. And I think this extends to my Muslim hombres, my Jewish homies, whatever religion you are. If you have a holy book, that holy book is there for a reason. And I would encourage you to continue to look deep and read those. Because in the day and age of media, anyone can fool you. Anyone can fool you. So you, my guy, you need to be planted deeply in whatever you believe based on your holy book. Because, you know, these televangelists, these people, these preachers, they will always change their opinions. They will always change their side. But do you know the one thing that will never change? Your holy book. So that is essentially what televangelism is. And my main issue with it, like I said, there's no problem in sharing your faith. But just do not trick people, do not take advantage of people, and especially don't take advantage of people who are gullible. Now, this conversation led to the next half of the conversation, which is about censorship. So this was like last week. We talked about televangelism. This week, we talk about censorship. I'm like, whoa, vroom, vroom, sir. I see what you're trying to do out in these streets. We started to talk about censorship this week and, you know, media censorship. And it kind of went down the political route. And of course, I'm like, man, freedom of speech, is it really free, eh? Are you going to pay with your life? Are you going to pay with your soul? So we went down the route of talking about censorship. Now, look, censorship is... I have a bone to pick with censorship, but you know what? It's all right. I don't need to talk about censorship if I don't want to, because you know what? Screw censorship. No, don't screw censorship. We need it to some extent. I think the problem with censorship is, like, where do we now draw the line? And one of the things we concluded from the televangelism talk was that where do you draw the line when it comes to televangelism? Because who? It's like putting a muzzle on, like, the higher power. And I was just like, yay, sir! Oh, when you say it like that now. Because, I mean, especially when you look back at, like, biblical history, you know, to some extent, people were trying to censor Jesus. So if we decide to censor all these religious institutes, blah, 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 you know, it's like, you know, we're no better than the Pharisees. When it comes to censorship in the light of televangelism or even in the light of the internet, I mean, it's so difficult because even with some of the new terms that come out daily on different social media platforms, like, you can't say this, you can't do that, you can't blah blah this, you can't blah blah that, you know, I feel like there are a lot of rules that are set up to protect us, and yet, you know, predatory behavior still happens. You know, people still manage to find loopholes and ways to break these rules, and it's just interesting to me. Interesting to me in the sense that there is so much, there's so little control that we really have over the censorship that these other bigger media companies really do have. And so then it comes to the question, you know, who is actually making these moral codes and who is being protected by these? So when they say no hate crimes, okay, fine. Yeah, you don't want to say stuff that's racially biased. You don't want to, you know, offend people based on their gender or sexuality. 100%. I agree with that. I think that's pretty good. But at the same time, where is the fine line between that and between critique? Because I feel like a lot of the times when we say no hate speech, no this, sometimes people like to use or defend their opinions based on, oh no, this is hate speech, this is blah blah blah, this is racially la la la, when in fact it's very valid and very solid critique. And I'm a firm believer that, you know, especially if you admire something, if you're a part of something, do not be afraid to go and critique it. Because if you truly, truly care about what, like a certain art form, if you truly care about a certain community, when something bad happens, you should be able to voice out what is wrong in black and white. But of course, we always have those people who are going to cry these tears and say, oh, you're hurting my feelings. You're... Look, the truth does not care about your feelings. And one thing that Tila and I said in the podcast, you know, help us plug again, is that there is the truth. There are two things that are always true. There's the truth and how you feel about the truth. How you feel about the truth will not change the truth. Now, of course, some things and some topics are not really as abstract as that, but there is definitely room for there to be a critique which can actually help people improve and help people see where they are wrong. But this only comes from people who are able to think critically and able to think aside from their feelings. Now, I'm not saying that feelings are bad. Of course, feelings kind of help us with our gut feeling and like where we know right or wrong, or when, you know, we're feeling heated about something. But one thing I've noticed is that a lot of people are not really willing to confront why they're feeling a certain way and much rather project this feeling onto other people without doing any research or without, you know, finding any prior information. So even when there is criticism, where there is a critique, you know, it's shut down because, oh no, you're being hateful, you're being blah, blah, blah. So it's like, well, no. Maybe this is me being cynical. Because in the same class that I had, we were talking about politicians, and we were looking specifically at like people like Donald Trump, Barack Obama, Modi, Xi Jinping, and... You know, we did like a simple Google search about, you know, what's in the news, who's reporting this news. And then my teacher brought up this point about how, like, you know, Donald Trump complained, like when he took all the social media platforms to court or something. And it's like, you know, why do people share this bad propaganda against Trump? He's not a bad person, la, la, la. And I remember I shared saying, you know, look, it's one thing to frame someone as a bad person. Now, framing is essentially when you basically code language and you try to create this image about a certain object or a certain event. And this frame is then transmitted to people, coding it as low, this equal bad or this equal good or this equals whatever. So he was trying to make that argument. But then I'm just like, sir, before you were banned from Twitter, who was tweeting from your account? Who was telling African and Asian countries that they were shithole countries? Was it you? Or was it the rest of us on the internet? So he can't get mad when the rest of us don't like him, when he literally just kind of insults us straight to our face. And, you know, that kind of leads me on to my point of, you know, when Donald Trump got censored, it was like, I was just like, in the moment, it's like, you got banned from all the social media platforms, la, la, la. But then at the same time, I remember watching this video from ABBA and Preach, where they discussed this topic a little bit. And I couldn't help but agree with them in the sense that even if Donald Trump is off of all of our social media channels, that's a form of censorship. Because in essence, unfortunately, I feel like there needs to be room. Yeesh, I'm gonna get canceled for this. But in a sense, there should kind of always be some kind of room for people to kind of have an opposing opinion. And maybe some opinions are a bit too polarizing. You know, like, for example, I know a lot of people would feel very triggered by Trump and his polarizing opinions about a lot of different things, you know. And, you know, sometimes, you know, what he would say is very harmful and would actually hurt the feelings of many, many people. Rightfully so. I mean, I'm not from a shithole country. I'm from a fucking shithole. I'm kidding. Or am I? We'll never know. But what I mean is... And as much as Trump was a polarizing character, he did... Okay, but then this also comes back to media ownership in the sense that, you know, Facebook is not a public... It's a public platform, but then it's still private owned by Uncle Mark over there. So it's neither here nor there, but in a sense that, you know, by him being removed from all things, it's just like, we don't like your rhetoric, we don't like what you're saying, get off, get out, you know, kind of deal. And, you know, maybe I think a lot of them are like, oh no, community guidelines, this community guidelines, that. Trust me, there are people on Twitter, on Facebook, on all these platforms who are saying much more fouler things than Trump will have ever said in his entire existence. And yet they still manage to find a space on
on all of these social platforms, it basically terrorized people. But I see like there's been less of a crackdown on them than there are on these more public figures that we see. But all in all, I would just say when it really comes down to it, because censorship will never ever be perfect, and we just have to use our own sense of media literacy to kind of see through all the bullshit that comes out from the day to day. The first thing is, if you hear a piece of news, you hear a piece of information, or someone tweets something and you're like, what the hell? Do your due diligence and just do a quick Google search. Okay, do a quick Google search, find out information, verify sources, verify the information that you're looking at, because especially in the day and age of COVID, a lot of information kind of floats around on the internet, floats around in different places. So if you go down, do your due diligence, ask the right questions, go to the right sources, I feel like you getting bamboozled by a televangelist or by a politician or by whoever the fuck should not be a problem. And that is the end of the first episode of the Media Sessions. I really, really hope you liked it. This is kind of the format I will be going with, simply because I think it's fun, I think it's interesting, and I would love to hear any feedback that you have for me. But yeah, it was really great hanging out with you guys. Catch me soon. How about that? Peace out.
Reach out to me on social media. You can find this podcast on Instagram at Let's Debunk It Podcast. Feel free to email me at letsdebunkit@gmail.com. That is letsdebunkit@gmail.com. If you didn't catch that, just check the show notes. If you enjoyed this episode or just like the podcast, be sure to give me a 5-star rating and leave me a comment. And to make sure you never miss an episode, subscribe on whatever platform you are listening on.